Support for this podcast and the following message come from Energia, where everyone can invest in the world's top renewable energy markets and make an impact. With Energia, you can invest directly in solar projects that reduce carbon emissions. More at energia.com/NPR.
Hey, it's B.A. Parker. It's almost the end of year, and this is the season when NPR comes to you as a nonprofit news organization to ask for your support. Maybe you're already an NPR Plus supporter, and so thank you so much. But if you've never given to public media before, or not in a while, please consider it now, because supporting public radio is a great way to express your values. You want to stay informed about what's going on in your community and around the world. You want to know where to turn for information you can trust and to hear perspectives that challenge your opinions. And believe me, I get it. Sometimes you want to tune out from the news and just hear a really cool story. NPR gives you that space to experience a little more joy, too. Our team here at Code Switch has loved bringing you episodes about everything from book bans to immigration to honoring enslaved ancestors and tackling your questions on Ask Code Switch. And together, we can do even more in 2025. The easiest way to support Code Switch and NPR network stations across the country is to sign up for NPR Plus. It's a recurring donation that gets you special perks for more than 25 NPR podcasts, like sponsor-free listening, bonus episodes, behind-the-scenes content, and even exclusive and discounted items from the NPR Shop and the NPR Wine Club. It only takes a few minutes to sign up, and you can do it right now at plus.npr.org. Thank you again for being a critical part of the public media community. Join NPR Plus at plus.npr.org. Hey, everyone. You're listening to Code Switch, the show about race and identity from NPR. I'm B.A. Parker. We're bringing you a bonus episode this week, because Gene subbed in over with our play cousins at It's Been a Minute to process the UnitedHealthcare CEO shooting news in a way that I haven't heard in other places. So I'll let Gene take it from here.
This message comes from BetterHelp. This holiday season, do something for a special person in your life. You. Give yourself the gift of better mental health. BetterHelp Online Therapy connects you with a qualified therapist via phone, video, or live chat. It's convenient and affordable and can be done from the comfort of your own home. Having someone to talk to is truly a gift, especially during the holidays. Visit BetterHelp.com/NPR to get 10% off your first month.
This message comes from Sun and Ski Sports. Picture the scene. Fresh powder, sparkling slopes, and effortless gliding on perfectly fitted skis. Sun and Ski Sports is making magical mountain moments possible this holiday season. Discover the best gifts of the season with up to 50% off premium outdoor brands. Purchases of skis or snowboards before December 30th include free setup and binding mount. Daily Advent calendar giveaways on social media add to the holiday excitement. Shop in-store or at sunandski.com.
Support for NPR comes from Google. This year, Google is celebrating the breakout searches of 2024 that captured the world's attention and shaped our year in ways we never saw coming. Watch the film at g.co/yearinsearch. Google, search on.
This is Eric Glass. On This American Life, we like stories that surprise you. For instance, imagine finding a new hobby and realizing
to do this hobby right, according to the ways of the masters, there's a pretty good chance that you're going to have to bend the law to get the materials that you need.
If not break it.
Yeah, to break international laws.
Real life stories, really good ones. This American Life.
What's good, everybody? All right, I'm joined by Abane Clayton, who covers gun violence for The Guardian. What's good, Abane?
Thanks for having me, Jane.
All right, so first I got to set the scene a little bit. So it's been over a week since a masked gunman shot and killed Brian Thompson, the CEO of UnitedHealthcare, outside a Manhattan hotel. This week, authorities identified and detained an alleged gunman, and he's being charged with murder. You've probably heard his name by now, Luigi Mangione. And we kind of have to walk a very delicate line here, because we're talking about, you know, violence here, a brazen murder. which is pretty scary to think about for a lot of people. And at the same time, there's been a lot of praise and solidarity for this alleged gunman and his actions. The alleged shooter even got his own superhero-esque nickname, with some people on the internet calling him the Adjuster. And on the other end, there are reports of CEOs across industries being scared for their lives, beefing up their security details, removing their identities from their company's websites. All right, Abane, as somebody who covers gun violence, how would you characterize the reactions we've been seeing to this shooting, and how have these reactions been different from the normal reactions to violence?
You know, it is violence hitting somebody who a lot of people feel like typifies the inequalities that lead to other forms of violence. You know what I'm saying?
Obviously, we are not condoning murder, and this is a awful tragedy for his family, but the response is, it reminds me a little bit of the way when you read about like Bonnie and Clyde, right? They were doing these really horrible things where they were killing people, they were robbing banks, but this is also during the Great Depression, and people are very, very angry at bankers, right? You know, banks had basically tanked the economy, and you know, people have lost their livelihoods, they lost their homes. And so because they were robbing banks, it was seen as a sort of, even though what they were doing wasn't sort of vigilantism, right? It wasn't sort of resolving any of the situations that people found themselves in. They were also going after, or like hitting the pockets of people that were really, really unpopular. And this feels kind of like that kind of folk hero thing.
I think the Bonnie and Clyde thing is quite accurate. Yes, this was a very public and hard to watch, traumatizing act of violence that will impact his family for years to come. And also, what does he represent? What's the backdrop, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that we don't really think about as, you know, violence. But just last year, the American Medical Association reported that a third of the physicians they surveyed, and they asked 1,000 physicians, a third of them said that they'd seen delay or denial of care due to prior authorization lead to, you know, either serious adverse health effects for their patients or even death. Why do you think people have a harder time seeing what happens to people like us on the business end of, you know, insurance companies' decisions as violence, but we can see gun violence more clearly as the destructive thing that it is?
Yeah, you know, it is violence, right? To me, by definition of what harm and violence is, I would absolutely put it in that category. But I think in the U.S., we have such a narrow framework of whose victimization deserves to be remediated. I hear it all the time when I write about shootings that happen, you know, in our hoods across America. Someone can straight up be shot and killed, a young 22-year-old, and it's like, well, that's no victim. Is that violence, or is that someone getting, you know, all these like flippant comments that now are kind of directed at this CEO? I've seen befall people with no power, very little money, honestly, whose communities have been scarred by the extractive nature of industries like healthcare. It's violent. But obviously, Brian Thompson is not a young Black boy on the corner who's unfortunately gunned down. But to see his victimhood also questioned in this way is, it's been interesting to watch.
We should also know here that we do know, at least the police said, that the bullets he used had inscribed on them the words deny, defend, and depose. And that echoes a phrase commonly used to describe the alleged tactics that insurers use to, you know, avoid paying out insurance claims to their customers. And United Healthcare, we should say, is the biggest health insurance company in the country. And it was just slammed last month in a Senate investigation for denying people certain types of care as a way to boost the company's profits. Like, honestly, when I first heard the news, I thought about when my wife and I were going through our long, arduous IVF journey. Not long after we, you know, conceived and had our son, I'm so thankful for, one of the big clinics in our area informed its patients that our health insurance was dropping coverage for that clinic. And so that didn't impact me and my wife directly, but we just could not stop thinking about all the other folks that we would see like in the waiting room, right? The people who are in the middle of treatment, And suddenly they were going to have to pay out of pocket if they could, right, to try to start a family. And it's just like very financially and emotionally devastating news that must have been to them, right? Because these are choices about their lives that are out of their hands. And it all kind of happened on a dime through the decisions of some healthcare executive or somebody with an actuarial table somewhere.
Then when you see like documents that show how sometimes arbitrary these decisions are, like your people's lives are being played with, you know what I'm saying? So that a spreadsheet is balanced. And that's a recipe for resentment. One thing that is usually a component of why someone shoots someone else is around grievance, right? You have done me wrong. And it sounds like, and obviously we don't know, like Luigi is innocent till proven guilty. He hasn't made any statements. It's unclear what his motivations are. But based on the context and the information that we have now, it appears that a part of the thinking was like, you have hurt all these people. Sending this signal is worthwhile.
Like, you know, I was reading something that said that the majority of Americans are satisfied with their healthcare, but the majority of Americans also say that they've had problems accessing that healthcare. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the people who report being in poorer health, majority of those people, unsurprisingly, overwhelming numbers of them, mm-hmm. of poor people who report being in poorer health, say that they're unhappy with their healthcare. So even the people who like their healthcare are frustrated by it, right?
When you're talking about it, it sounds like how people at the airport are like, this sucks, but, you know, it's the airport. It should not be that way when you need to go down to get your pap smear and your colonoscopy. Just because we have become used to terrible service in this particular department does not mean things are going okay. I think that just having coverage, period, has so many Americans just like, oh, okay, I don't got nothing else to complain about. You know what I'm saying? I got my coverage card. And that's a shame. That's a mm-hmm. shame, Gene. But it's also not being acknowledged.
Absolutely. I mean, on that point, right, I've seen a lot of people criticizing how the media has been covering this, like how the public is riding with this alleged shooter and the media hasn't been able to capture that sentiment. How do you think the reactions of the public differ from what you've seen, from the way you've seen this covered?
You know, when I knew that I'd be coming on to talk about this topic, I started paying more attention to cable news and I saw people straight up like scold, right? And say, oh, and there's this like disgusting perversion and people loving it. And like having that become a part of the story feels incredibly tone deaf, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm also concerned that mainstream national news is putting the same sort of burden of badness, if you will, on people getting their jokes off on the internet, on people who are saying, who are telling their stories, right, of these horrific outcomes because of shoddy healthcare coverage. They're putting those on the same level as folks who have actually contributed to that harm, right? Like you can't say that you're just as bad as the billionaire who is, you know, buying up these homes and selling them at exorbitant rates. You're just as bad as that person because you got a joke off about Brian Thompson. That's just not true. We can't equate those. And I think that doing so will only lead to more alienation and lead people to double down. You know what I'm saying? It's dangerous.
You know, it was really interesting to see Ben Shapiro, you know, famed right-wing pundit, sort of lamenting, the air quotes, the left's response to the shooting and taking glee. His audience clapped back at him really pretty hard. It was like, nah, this is not a left thing. We are very angry at these people too. Like, we don't have tears to shed for these people as well, which was really interesting to watch them have to metabolize the fact that this wasn't like partisan schadenfreude. This was like a thing that is felt broadly across ideological categories.
The polarization you mentioned, whenever there is a high profile kind of vigilante style shooting, it's usually pretty evenly split along party lines, right? You think of Trayvon Martin, of Ahmaud Arbery, you know, so many folks who were shot by usually a white or white adjacent person who said, I'm taking the law into my own hand. Usually you can rely on how people are going to feel about that, on who they voted for in their politics. And I think they were going to see the alleged shooter as this sort of like Antifa figure who their base would reject. But their base I'm sure was among the Americans who are like, yeah, I got healthcare, but it don't work for me. And that has just thrown people into a warp that is really interesting to watch, but I worry won't end in root cause solutions, as most mass shootings don't.
I keep thinking about when we cover like police violence on Code Switch, one of the things we always have to like remind people is that like these individual cases, they often unearth like all this feeling, anger that people have over historical racism, right? Like it all comes to bear on these individual cases. But there's no way the actual resolution of these cases, like in an American court, right? Like it's going to resolve all those issues, right? And so I imagine that the trial for Luigi Mangione is going to be really, really heavily covered, right? Maybe even like OJ levels of coverage, right? But then what's going to happen is that people are going to like think of the verdict as reckoning with all this other stuff that this case has unearthed. And it can't do that. The verdict is only about this case. It's only going about who shot whom, who was where. I wonder what that means for how we do or don't resolve all that other stuff.
This is something I have been thinking about, right? Like this really high profile incident of gun violence, what is it going to change? I worry that much like other high profile shootings, especially high profile mass shootings, where someone does it for these grievance reasons, I don't think that those will ever truly get addressed with this. And I'm just really worried that we're going to lose the plot, which is that millions of people, even if they do have insurance, don't have actual access to healthcare in a timely, sustainable, affordable manner. And the fact that that continues to get lost is extremely worrying and makes the ground really fertile for someone else to try it, you know?
So I guess to close out, I'm wondering, like, at the end of the day, this is still the killing of a man whose murder, as we said, is like standing in for all these other things, right? This rage that so many people feel towards this larger system. I'm wondering, what do you think are the wrong lessons that we could take away from this moment?
One of the negative things we can get out of this is just seeing more and more people be okay with folks settling their grievances with guns. We see arguments that start in bars that end in shootings. We see conflict in homes that end up with entire families dead, straight up. And I understand where the jokes are coming from. And you know, a couple have elicited a little like, ooh, they kind of ate it with that one. I don't want the lesson that people take from this to be like, oh, well, I could, oh my gosh, I'll shoot somebody too. And then my message will get out. Right? Because we've seen that sentiment lead to some of the most devastating high-profile mass shootings in our nation's history. Because someone said, I got a grievance, y'all got me messed up, and I got this gun, watch what's gonna happen.
Abede, you are incredible. I've learned so much here. Thank you so much for coming and trying to think about this and trying to make sense of this very banana story. And obviously, this story is far from over. I mean, this trial is gonna be an obsession. So thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a great discussion.
That was Abene Clayton. She covers gun violence for The Guardian.
And that's our show. You can follow us on Instagram at NPR Code Switch. If email is more your thing, ours is codeswitch@npr.org. And subscribe to the podcast on the NPR app or wherever you get your podcast. You can also subscribe to the Code Switch newsletter by going to npr.org/codeswitchnewsletter. Just a reminder that signing up for Code Switch Plus is a great way to support our show and public media. And you'll get to listen to every episode sponsor-free. So please go find out more at plus.npr.org/codeswitch.
This episode of It's Been a Minute was produced by
Barton Girdwood,
Alexis Williams,
Liam McBain,
Corey Antonio Rose.
Our executive producer is
Jasmine Romero.
Our VP of programming is
Yolanda Sanguini.
This episode was produced for Code Switch by Xavier Lopez. It was edited by Courtney Stein. And a big shout out to the rest of the Code Switch massive: Christina Kahla, Jess Kung, Leah Donella, Dahlia Murtada, Rylan Williams, and Jasmine Romero. I'm B.A. Parker. Hydrate.
This message comes from GiveWell. GiveWell provides rigorous, transparent research about the best giving opportunities so that donors can make informed decisions about high-impact giving. To learn more, go to givewell.org and pick podcast and enter NPR at checkout.
This message comes from Thuma. Create your oasis with Thuma, a modern design company that specializes in furniture and home goods. Thuma's core collection, the classic bed, nest dresser, and pillar bookshelf, combines craftsmanship, simplicity, and functionality, bringing inspiration and purpose to every home. To explore Thuma's entire collection, visit thuma.co or the flagship location in New York City. Pieces ship quickly and arrive straight to your door. To get $100 towards your first bed purchase, go to thuma.co. This message comes from Warby Parker. What makes a great pair of glasses? At Warby Parker, it's all the invisible extras without the extra cost, like free adjustments for life. Find your pair at warbyparker.com or visit one of their hundreds of stores around the country.